Welcome to the fourth and final session of the Update on HIV and SARS-CoV-2 online symposium, held with safety precautions in the studios of Roularta Healthcare. We thank ViiV for their support of these programs. This session focused on immune strategies for SARS-CoV-2 and HIV. In the final talk of the session, Symposium Chairman Professor Linos van der Kerkhove of the HIV Cure Center at Ghent University summarized the current status of HIV-1 cure clinical trials. He said more than 8,000 studies are listed on clinicaltrials.gov for HIV-1 using a very large number of different strategies.
Now, if you narrow that down to more cure-oriented research, that goes down to 161 trials that are currently evaluating cure efforts in HIV. Now, cure is, covering many aspects, and you see very well that cure efforts are like scattered and can be latency-reversing agents that are tackled, inflammation that is tackled, specific antibody-based therapies, and so on. So many aspects can be looked at. Now, in the interest of time, I will focus mainly on antibody and T-cell receptor and immune therapy-based strategies and come to that over the next 10 minutes. Now, antibody-based therapies have been used in medicine for over nearly 100 years now, and there's been very much interest over the last decades, I would say, where we have been using monoclonal antibodies as in internal medicine for many diseases. I think rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, but also in dermatology-based diseases, rheumatology-based diseases, and now more recently also and broadly used in oncology-based treatment. So we are getting used to that. Now, in HIV, we don't call it antibodies, but we rather use the term broadly neutralizing antibodies because they are neutralizing HIV in a broad sense, in that way that they should neutralize different virus clades and different virus subtypes. And the antibodies can be divided in those that bind more the CD4 receptor, those that bind more the coreceptor region, those that bind more the membrane proximity region, and that's the way they are classified today and can be used, and depending on what has been studied, they can be more used for basic research, they can be in development in clinical trials for cure or prevention and so on. So that's another way of looking at it, but most people classify them according to the spot of binding to the GP120 region. A key study that evaluated anti-HIV broadly neutralizing antibodies has been published in Nature in 2018. And what you see here is that infusion of antibodies on regular time frames, on two weekly time frames, allows people to suppress the virus even in the absence of antiretroviral therapy. So the combination of two neutralizing antibodies is as potent as broadly neutralizing antibodies. The problem is you have to infuse it regularly, you have to combine it, you have to make sure it's potent enough, and so on.
Of 9 patients treated with the cocktail of neutralizing antibodies, 2 of the patients achieved long-term control of their HIV infections.
And this has then subsequently be translated in follow-up clinical trials that using these antibodies with a mutated Fc domain that should increase the half-life. So what are the take-home messages here? That these antibodies are potent and can replace antiretroviral therapy. What we should figure out is should we combine it? How can we make sure that patients have a sensitive reservoir for it? How can we produce them over a long term? And should we combine it with a latency reversing agent to make sure we move into the direction of, or with another immune modulator to move into the direction of a cure? Now, another approach before going deeper into the antibodies that specifically for HIV, is to use an anti-CD4 monotherapy. And this is a study that has been published in the New England Journal of Medicine, New England Journal of Medicine, where people used CD4 targeting antibodies, not depleting the CD4 cells, but an antibody that targets the CD4 receptor. And this is used in monotherapy, so no resistance occurred because you target the CD4 receptor, and if the virus starts mutating and it can't bind to the CD4 receptor anymore, it's also non-infectious. So it needs that CD4 receptor. So the viremia is controlled in the absence of antiretroviral therapy by using one single monoclonal antibody targeting the CD4. So that's quite an impressive phase 1/2 clinical trial, which is now been followed up in more extensive study that will recruit up to 520 participants. And I think we are looking very much forward to see results of that clinical trial.
He then asked how it would be possible to make broadly neutralizing antibodies, or BNABs, more potent while making them dual active. The answer is the use of dual affinity retargeting proteins, or DARTs, comprising two distinct antigen binding sites. The two DART chains are covalently linked, resulting in a stable bridge between target and effector cells.
So DARTs have a binding domain for, in that case, for example, the CD3 receptor, and on the other hand, being an HIV, having an HIV-specific part, a broadly neutralizing antibody. And then you kind of link two cells together. So the infected cell that starts to produce virus, there the broadly neutralizing antibody part will bind, and the T cell, which can be a CD8 T cell or a T helper cell, that increases the inflammatory milieu and leads to the destruction of the infected cell. So that's the way DARTs are acting. Now, another way to improve BNAPs is to make them what we call more broadly acting by increasing the number of BNAP domains. So this is a tri-specific instead of a monospecific antibody, where you combine the antibody properties of different antibodies. So this antibody will bind more broad HIV strains than monotypic antibody. And this is something that has been actually further developed by Tsibris and also will move into clinical trials. So both of these approaches are moving forward and are recruiting as we speak.
Professor van der Kerkhove proposed a couple of ways to avoid the necessity of infusing antibodies every week or two.
One way to get around this is to mutate the Fc receptor, which would allow longer periods between two infusions, up to maybe 3 or 6 months. But another way is to have a continuous expression of levels of antibody. And here you see an adenovirus-based, an AAV8-based expression of VRC01. And the data was recently presented at CROI, in which in eight individuals, AAV expression was in was in or BNAP expression was induced via the AAV vector platform, and that resulted in a biphasic production of antibodies over long term. And in two to three patients showed from these eight patients a long-term production of VRC07 in patients, in HIV-positive patients. So this is a first trial where a continuous production of BNAPs is generated by AAV. And the data is basically backed up by non-human primate data. And some of you might have already heard about the Miami monkey. Well, this is a monkey that in which there was a continuous suppression of the viral load mediated by an adeno-based vector system that produced high levels of antibody and resulted in a continuous suppression of the virus that did not came back yet. So that's a way of delivering. Now, another key question is how should we combine it? And this is also a key study by Borducci in Nature, where he combined antibodies that were infused with a TR7 agonist. And in the sham infusion, viral rebound occurred very fast in all the animals. But if we do the single approaches, we have some of the animals that can control the virus. However, if we do a combined approach of TRS7 with a BNAP in combination in these non-human primates, 5 of the 11 rhesus macaques did not demonstrate a rebound of the virus. We have to say that antiretroviral therapy was started very soon after infection, within 1 week, which is a comment on this study, but the results are intriguing. Now, others have tried to copy that, and this is a study that also was shown at CROI this year, where the previous study was copied also in a new non-human primate model. And there, the antiretroviral therapy was started later, only after 2 weeks, so only 1 week difference. But we know that this has a major impact on reservoir distribution. And there, the results could not be repeated, and this did not demonstrate similar activity results as the previous study. So this is PGT-121 with an also a TLR7 agonist, which was not the same one as the previous one. They could not repeat these results, but you see a delay in rebound, which is not statistically significant. And this has then also fueled lots of other studies. And one very intriguing study where we all looked forward to is the study from our Denmark friends and colleagues, where they combine romidepsin with BNAP in the roadmap study. And what was observed there was that the viral rebound is at least as fast or even faster in the combination study versus the ones that only received romidepsin. Now, the one comment to make there is that the BNAP sensitivity is a difficult one to address. And what people usually do is they try to amplify the ENF region of the virus and use prediction tools to see if that particular antibody is sensitive if the patient's reservoir will be sensitive for that antibody. And dependent on the tool they used, they had different outcomes. So it still might be an issue of having used antibodies which have a decreased sensitivity for the particular reservoir of that patient. So that still needs further investigation. Other studies, like the Titan and AMFAR study, use TLR9 agonists in combination with BNAPs. They are actively recruiting now, enrolling patients, and we very much look forward to see their results. Now, another combination which is very intriguing is the combination of antibodies together with an IL-15 agonist, and this has a name, N-803. And you see here that this combination, that this IL-15 agonist, if it's used in donors, in healthy subjects, that it increases a proliferation. So in the left panel, you see CD69. So you have activation and proliferation of cells upon administration of the IL-15 agonist. And in that model, which is a study in non-human primates, you see that there is, in rhesus macaques actually, you see that these rhesus macaques controlled the virus after the infusion of this IL-15 agonist together with these monoclonal antibodies. And this in contrast to the rhesus macaques that did not receive this combination therapy. So also there, we have a control of viral load. So in 6 out of the 8 rhesus macaques showed a durable control of viremia on our treatment interruption, which is also very intriguing. So immunotherapy seems to potentially result in control of virus when it's combined with the good immunomodulators. Now, ongoing cell therapy trials can be divided to those that target HIV infection, and in those that where you generate cells that resist HIV. And for both of them, clinical trials are in design or on their way to be further developed. So in the next decade, we're looking forward to see lots of results from these interesting efforts. Now, in conclusion, I think it's fair to say that for many years, latency reverse-based therapies for cure have shown disappointing results, but now we have accumulating body of evidence that show that bNAPs are a viable treatment option, but not only for treatment, but also potentially for cure. They should be combined with the right partner, and we still need more data to see which partner that is. We have the issue of potential already pre-existing resistance to the reservoir, so that has to be in depth better looked at. But combinations might increase the genetic barrier to resistance, and that's for sure the way to go.
After Professor van de Kerkhove's presentation, session co-chair Guido van Ham of the Institute of Tropical Medicine in Antwerp engaged in a conversation with him, offering some comments and posing some questions.
So first, you label this broad neutralizing antibody therapy as potential for cure, but in fact, it is a treatment, no? It is a treatment. It's an entry inhibitor, in fact, that has the potential to be long-term active, but it remains an entry inhibitor. There is, of course, these intriguing experiments in macaques, and I do not know actually if it has been reproduced in these patients that you showed, that in some monkeys, after the monoclonals had disappeared, the viral load remained undetectable. And then, as you probably know, they discovered that these animals had CD8 T cells that were able to suppress the virus. So it was a kind of combined humoral and cellular therapy. Has there been any follow-up on this? Because that was more to be considered as a permanent cure, or at least permanent suppression without the need for any antiretroviral, because broad neutralizing antibodies are antiretrovirals, no?
Well, they do more than that. As you also know, they have this ADCC and ADCP function, which is something we don't have with classical antiretrovirals, so they might in lymph nodes have an activity which is underestimated. And that has also been put forward as one of the reasons why in that key publication that I showed published in Nature, where they give this combination of two bNAPs, one person, and there's no follow-up data, but have at least to what has been distributed in the field, more than 1.5 years after the infusion did not demonstrate signs of a viral rebound.
So did he have CD8 T cells that were able to suppress the virus?
Well, it's the way they look at it in non-human primates is to give an anti-CD8 treatment and then to see that the virus comes up. So that's a bit maybe unethical to do in someone that's just starting to control as one of the first people the virus by doing a therapeutic approach.
Yeah, but you could do an ex vivo experiment pre and post with CD8 T cells and see the viral suppression by CD8 T cells.
No, but one of the things that I also wanted to say is that obviously, it's more than an antibody if you have these additional effects, and especially if you can produce them, like with an AAV vector or another way, genetically modifying your B cells or other cells. On the long term, you could imagine that you have longer-term production of these antibodies, which would then even more induce ADCC and ADCP functions and have more potential to lead to a cure than all the latency reversing agents that we have been using so far, which did not show any, let's say, such a promising effects.
Session co-chair Gilles Darcy then asked about the shock strategy, which had not produced any interesting results, either in vitro or in vivo.
So do you think that we have to move to other strategies, or don't you think that we have to optimize the shock strategies, for instance, by combining latency reversing agents?
Well, so the problem with the shock strategy is obviously also that they have mainly been evaluated as single strategies. So the kill was not present. So optimizing both the shock and the kill is something that we still have to move forward with both of them. You cannot say, you know, we only look at kill and leave the shock behind, because then we have to, then we accept that we have to stop treatment, or in order to make sure that there is enough target for killing. And in the context today of having like this 90-90-90, the treatment as a prevention, undetectable as untransmittable, these are quite opposite messages. So I think for today, we definitely have to keep on investigating in latency reversing agents to have safer trials that can move on. In the absence of such a safe trials, clinical trials will also evaluate the combination of treatment interruption together with better kill strategies. But on the long run, it would definitely be safer to have a good latency reversing agent followed by an adequate kill strategy. So I'm not advocating that we should stop. I think the point that I wanted to make is that it's definitely needed to go one step further than the latency reversing agents alone, which was mainly what we have been doing over the last 15 years, where there was a lot of effort on latency reversing agents.
I was wondering whether IL-15 has not this potential dual effect, because IL-15 is very closely related to IL-2 that you can use to reactivate the virus. But when it is introduced in vivo, it has other effects, immune effects, because that's why it works. And in fact, it has been shown in the primate model that it activates natural killer cells, and that these natural killer cells penetrate into the sanctuaries of the follicular, the helper follicular. But I was wondering, to what extent is it also reactivating the virus in vivo? And so has this dual effect, on one hand reactivating the virus, on the other hand making sure that the reactivated virus is killed?
Clinical trials are on their way there, so I'm sure they will evaluate that now.
And this concludes our coverage of Session 4, the final session of the Update on HIV and SARS-CoV-2 Online Symposium. We thank our speaker, Professor Linos van der Kerkhove, all the speakers who participated in the 4 parts of this symposium, and we thank you for listening. And again, we thank ViiV for their support.